derivative of the first
times the second
plus the first times the derivative of the second. I know you're gonna memorize. There are certain rules that you can memorize, but it's worth memorizing because it's a lot better than expanding. Now, that's the easy one to expand. I can give you ones that take you half an hour to expand. So that's it. You just sit there and say, I'm gonna derivative of the first, I'll multiply by the second, then I'll add the first times the derivative of the second. The rest is just collecting terms. That's just algebra. So let's try and see if you can pull up the derivative here. F prime of x. Now, I find when I'm doing the product rule, the quotient rule, I want to keep track which one I did the derivative of. And so my own personal preference, you don't have to use this, but I find my own personal preference, because I keep forgetting what I did, I use square brackets to represent where I did the derivative. That way I'm looking back at it, I'll say, oh, yes, that's my derivative dude. So the derivative of the first, so rather than using round brackets, I'm using square brackets. What's the derivative of 3x cubed? 9x plus 4x, and we have to do that one, minus 4. There's the derivative of my first, times my second, plus my first. So I'm writing the whole first right out there. And the derivative of my second, which is going to be, look at the first term is? 30x to the fifth plus, there it is. How close is that?
Finish.
It's easy. How close is that? If I wanted to do something, graph it or find something out with it, it's just algebra. For us, it's just algebra, manipulating stuff like that. How close is that? This BC is the derivative. It is a beast, isn't it? That's the product rule. That's kind of neat. And I'm going to give you one to play with in a second. So product rule. Okay, W of x equals f of x times g of x. Then W prime of x is f prime of x times g of x plus f of x times g prime of x. Mathematically. Okay. In other words, derivative of the first times the second plus the first derivative of the second. That's all it is.
How many more rules are there?
7,613.
14.
14. Find an example for you to pick. See one that you can do. Boring one. Have you just create one? All right, your challenge. Find me the derivative. Find me f prime of x.
So the first plus the dog is
going to be. Yeah, we're done. We're done. Finish. The rest is just. If you need to expand it out to fresh events, you can do that.
So for this one, we just have to. You just don't have to know that part.
That's it. Calculus is that. The rest of it is what you want to do with it. So if you wanted to simplify it and clarify terms, you can do that. You want to try to factor it? You can do that. I don't know what you're going to do with it. Once you get the calculus, depending on the question, what you do with it tells you what you need to do the next step. Done. Everything you use right there. So if you want to expand it and write it as a nice polynomial, you can do that. So I'll try this now. CLU square brackets, that just tells me which one of those guys had the derivative. So if I'm looking back at it, it's nice and easy for me to check. Because if I sit there and say something's wrong with my answer, I can always look back and say, oh, this should be the derivative of that.
I was just going to check it.
Yeah. So.
Says the same thing in general mathematics. Just want to show you and impress your friends and neighbors by writing your ugly arguments.
It just says, this just basically says, do the derivative of f with respect to x. That's all that says. Df? Yeah. Sometimes you may see it written. This is Newton's notation, because he likes the note so prime. If you were doing two derivatives, you put two primes. If you're doing three derivatives, you put three primes, right? Then you go to Roman numerals. Your primes, you sort of IVIXX and all that kind of stuff, right? Because math people love doing derivatives. More than physics, we happen to agree with them, right? Math people, they like to impress their friends and do the derivatives again. This is Leibniz notation. The advantage of this is that you can just see what you're doing the derivative respect to. We're always doing the derivative respect to an x, because a function has x's in there. And if we had a t, and we had some of the t's, we would just do df dt. This says you're doing the derivative respect to t. So let's see what we've got here. Derivative of the first, what you got? 10x plus? Right on, times x plus 3. What do you get for the next one?
5x.
Right, times?
7.
Yeah, right. Easy. Anything. Calculus is done. You can do with it what you want. You want to expand it, quadratic terms, fantastic. You want to use quadratic terms, then factor, fantastic. It's up to you guys. They all say the same thing. Right? That is the product rule. That's easy. Now, let's see if we can think this thing out. We won't do it, but this is like advanced. We'll do something that's more advanced just to think about it. What would you think we should do if I give you this? Besides trying to expand it out ugly like?
You'd end up with 5 brackets, I think. Because you'd have the same as the other ones.
Right? So, and so you're trying to explain to somebody how you would actually do the derivatives. In English, what would you try to explain them? What's
the best way to do the derivative of each of those paired up with the function.
Okay, I think I understand what you say. You're saying pair something up and then you apply the product rule?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, because if I take this as one piece, let me just put a little smoothie brackets around here. I now have a product of two things. Right? It just happens that this guy also is a product. So I do the derivative of this. So when I do the derivative of this, what rule do I have to apply? Product rule. So I do the derivative of this, which is the product rule, so this would be like three boards long, times this plus this times the derivative of that. And then it comes to you. So when you got three things, you just group two of them as one function. But when you do the derivative of that one function, you again would have to apply the product rule inside that function. Now I can group these two together, I can group those two. It doesn't matter how I group them. It doesn't make any difference how I group them. But I still, my product rule says I got two guys multiplied together. And once I do the first dude, and if I do the derivative of the first dude, and the first dude is a product, and I can do the product rule within probably was, I got to do with the derivative of its first guy times its second guy plus its first guy times its derivative of its second guy. And take that and multiply by this dude, and then just expand it out following the rule.
So do you multiply the first two by the derivative of the third?
Well, let's just get it going. We won't look it up, right? So I got to do the derivative of the first dude, right? So I'm going to do the derivative of this guy right here. Well, the derivative of this guy says, I got to now do the derivative of this guy, it's a particle. So I'm going to do the derivative of this, which is 2x plus 1 times the derivative of the first times the second plus the first. Times the derivative of the second, which is 9x squared minus 1. This is just the derivative of that. Derivative of this times plus, now I can write the first dude out, which is x plus 1 times 3x cubed minus x. Times the root of the second guy, which is 18x plus 1. So we did it. But then, of course, if you want to make it neat, you have to expand all this thing out by four times.
Oh,
God. But that's only 3. Imagine if I take 4.
Wow.
That's not. Oh, yes. Then you do 2 of them together. So there must be a shorter way.
There must be something good.
There must be, or there must be an easier way of doing the 2.
Or would you do 2 and then 3 and then?
I would, yeah. You know, sometimes, if they're all different, you have no choice. You can do 2 and then 3, and within the 3, you put the 2 and the 1. And your teacher gives you a question like that, and they'll give it to you to do it. Because you'll be spent, and you'll come back with a wad of paper with your answer all worked out. Or you're smart, you go and get a computer program to do it for you.
Yeah, there must be something.
Yes, Mathematica, Maple. Maple's actually here in Honolulu. Maple's a company that does all this stuff, software. And they're actually, again, at the university, they write programs to do that. It's programs to students as well. You can plug it in, say, give the derivative, and it pops it right out. And you'll even do it slow for you, so you can see step as well. There. So that's the product rule. And you can apply the product rule to the inside as many times as you can. Now, there's another rule called the quotient rule. Now, I can give you the quotient rule, but I don't want you to memorize so much stuff. You can actually use your knowledge of math, and in doing the quotient, you can actually change it to a product.
I'm not sure.
But before we do that, I've got to show you another rule in between, just before that. Okay? So, there's going to be a disadvantage. The disadvantage is you have to learn another rule, which you have to learn it anyways. But once you know that other rule, it allows you not to memorize how to do a quotient. But there is one that shows if you like to study up on the quotient. So there's the product rule. Now I'm going to give you the chain. So this will. Now this one, I think, is the most important of all of these. And it's going to take a while to get your head around it. But once you get your head around it, it's not too bad. Let's see. Chain rules are really useful. You'll use a lot of chain rules in science for sure. Because remember how we said I talked about functions and function notation? And I said one of the things you can do is you can put another function inside a function. So this is what's going to happen here. This is what the chain rule is about. What happens if you've got a function inside another function? How do you do the derivative when the function is eating a function? So somehow you want to get the derivative of the inside function outside. You sit down. How do you do that? Lucky for you, there's a chain rule. Lucky for you, you don't have to prove it. Unlucky for you, when you take calculus in the university of math, you will. So, let me just kind of represent a composite function. Let me give an example first, it's nice and easy. Y equals, it's not going to look strange. That's a composite function. You have an inside function. see the inside function right here? Here I am. It's inside the outside function. The outside function cubes the inside function. It's almost like this. If I said f of x equals x cubed, what is f of 3x squared plus x? And you would say, well, that's easy. That's 3x squared plus x cubed. That's a composite function. That's a function that's eaten another function. Did you say it's in there? It's inside there, wanting to get out? My baby was doing that on the weekend or on Thursday. My wife saying, please, now's the time. Yeah. And I'm a dad. All I got to do, this is easy, I got to count. And all the doctor said, count to 10. 3 times every contraction. Count to 10. My job was easy. So, here's a composite function. Now, if you've got an inside function and an outside function. So the derivative is going to be I'm going to use the word outer.
Just,
this is easy. You can do the derivative of the outer and multiply by the derivative of the inner. This is a conformal chain. I'll explain it in the chain rule. In the other notation, you'll see why it kind of links that way. So let's work this thing out. All right. Remember, the outer function is this thing with this guy. Yeah. It's like the brackets of this thing. Well, the derivative of that is going to be 3 times 3x squared plus x to the squared. So there's the derivative of the outer. Right? Just, we already know that. It's a power rule. We know that rule. Derivative of the outer one. And then all we do is multiply. There's my multiply sign. I like using a little dot. It's easier than writing an x, because everything's an x. And all I do is multiply for the derivative of the inner. Now, always put brackets around derivative of the inners, because you can have more than one term. Because remember, you're multiplying the derivative of the outer, multiply by the derivative of the inner. Now, the derivative of the inner guy is going to be 6x plus 1. Done. Derivative is done. This is me. I could have done the product rule here. I could have expanded this thing all out and said 3x squared plus x times 3x squared plus x times 3x squared plus x and done it this way. Or I could have expanded it all out the polynomial way, which is not the answer. Or that I recognize it's a function inside another function. I can do the chain rule. We're done. Easy.
So we're
done. Not only are we done, the chain rule is nice and fat.
Can you have a function inside a function inside a function?
We're just joining the link. The derivative of the outer times the derivative of the middle times the derivative of the inner. Right? You just keep going. You have 7 layers, like onions. You just work your way on the outer, just doing the derivatives and multiply them in. That's it. Right? It gets long, but so what? Right? Perfect. Now, it's called the chain rule because some books will write it this different way. So you have a function. So you have y. Well, let's say something like this. You have this little guy right here. Y equals. I'll just rewrite it again. 3x squared plus x cubed. Right? And it's almost like I've got y equals u cubed, but u is equal to 3x squared plus x. Right? Can you see how it kind of works? Right? So this is like, take this, and then the u is really this. You put it all together. So this says, do the derivative of the first guy, do the derivative of y in respect to u, which we did, 3u squared, okay? Then you multiply it times the derivative of the last guy, which we did, 6x plus 1, and the operation here is multiply. So this is what they call links of a chain. So you can have as many links as you want. But the easiest way to remember, derivative of the Audi times the derivative of the innie. And if the innie has also an innie, you do the derivative of it times its derivative of its innie. Right? Right? Belly button. Sometimes you have Audi, sometimes you have innies, right? You just do the derivatives, right? You guys kind of got that?
Yeah.
Anybody else got it? Well, do another example.
No.
Yeah, somebody turn over to give an example. Yeah, the polynomial example. So, let's try this one. F of x equals the square root of 3x squared minus 9x plus 1. Okay, so we want to do the derivative of that. So here's your challenge. Now, first of all, you're sitting there saying, oh, square root, panic. Think about it, panic. How can I rewrite that so that I can do the square root? Yeah, this is just the same as 3x squared minus 9x plus 1 to the 1 half. Okay? That's just algebra, not calculus. So, regulars and dudettes, let's get busy. Find the derivative. Take the outer, and multiply by the derivative of the inner. And you've done it. What did you get when you did the derivative of the outer function?
1/2
times the species. Right to 1/2 minus 1. -1/2, perfect. There's the derivative of the outer. That's multiplied by the derivative of the innie, which is
6.
Perfect. And if you want to press on that feature, can I not write that as 6x minus 9 over 2 times the square root of 3x squared minus 9x plus 1. Right? The negative just means that this BC here is on the bottom. Just the half means it's a square root. 2 is already on the bottom, so I might as well go down there and join it.
You really impress your teacher, so you're not supposed to leave the square root above.
No, you can. No, that's one of the misconceptions. Some teachers say rationalize the denominator. Some teachers say rationalize the numerator. It depends on what you're going to do with it. Right? Depends on what you're going to do with it. Yeah, so tell them that at the perimeter, they said, you don't necessarily have to rationalize. Now, they'll say, to get your full marks, you do. So don't win out that battle because they're going to mark you your test. But there are certain times when you want to rationalize the denominator. There are certain times when you want to rationalize the numerator. They say that because they want to make it a standard so that in the back of the book it matches. Everybody does the same thing. That's typically why they do it. But for us, it means something. I can look at this, I know my domain. It tells me something else, right, with the denominator. I know where my denominator cannot be. I know the restrictions on that. Nothing wrong, one way or the other. As long as you know how to go back and forth, that's the important. That's the stuff you need to grasp. Somebody says rationalize it, you know how to do it. They say don't, maybe, you know. How many people got it? That's easy. Right? That's the thing. We're now like in month number 4. Right? Nice. We're pretty soon going to get there. Now, because we know the chain rule, and the thing with chain rule, yeah, like I said, you can have one inside the other and one inside the other. It doesn't get too, you know, usually it's just most functions are this way. You got ways of, see, what you've done in the chain rule, you can handle doing square roots, cube roots. You can also do quotient. Let me show you a quotient. Because there is a rule, but you don't, if you can, we're going to apply this and this to get around it. So those of you want to learn the quotient rule and memorize the quotient rule, feel free. Right? Those of you who don't and want to derive it yourself, that's the best thing. You can derive anything you need. You don't have to memorize it. As I said, I have no problem memorizing where I live, my phone number, right? And even my phone number, right? Because I never call myself. I have in my wallet my card. My card's got where I live and my phone number. Because I never call myself. Yeah, the only time I've used my phone number is if somebody asks, what's your phone number? And if I've been asked quite often, I know what it is, I'll recite it. But if it's been like 7 months, somebody asks, what's your phone number? You sit there and you go, I go back to numbers I had before. You ever had that? You go, hang a second, that's not my number. I have to change that. Now, here's my number now, right? Oh, but I got it in my wallet, so I just pull it up and say, here it is. How long are you going to do that? Just 10 years, but here it is. Quotient. Let's just have a look at an example. F of x. See, there's a quotient. Quotient just means I'm dividing by something. I can use this. Can I not rewrite that way?
Yes.
And now all I have to do is do the product rule. And the product rule says I do the derivative of the first, which is b times the second, which is 3x minus 9 to the minus 1, plus the first. And says do the derivative of the second. Now the second, derivative of the second, what rule am I going to apply?
Chain rule.
So I do minus 1 bracket 7x minus 9 to the minus 2. I need to use some more room here. So that's the derivative of the outside. And you multiply by the derivative of the inside. What's the derivative of the inside?
7.
And we're done. That's great. We'll just do a bit of house cleaning just to sit there and see it. So this is 3 times 7x minus 9 minus 1, right? Minus 1 times 7, I just go minus 7 times 3x plus 4 times 7x minus 9 to the minus 2. Now, if I really wanted to do something, I could actually rewrite this as 3 over 7x minus 9 minus 7 times 3x plus 4. Or this is just 7x minus 9 squared. If I wanted to get a common denominator, I just multiply this by 7x minus 9 by 7x minus 9, and I got an x common denominator. Okay. So that's a way of doing the quotient. Right? So that way you don't have to memorize the quotient rule. Those of you who would like to see the quotient rule, let's have a look. And you get to pick and choose which one you want. Both of them will give you the same answer. But I'm saying, once you understand calculus, you can actually create the rules as you go. So let's have a look at the quotient. So I'll write it generically in English. So f prime There we go. So there's the quotient rule as an edge rule. Again, not to prove it, but it's something teachers to do. What the university professors to do. Derivative of the top times the bottom minus the top times the derivative of the bottom. Notice on the front rule it's a plus, here it's a minus. Just think of p of 5, p of plus, if you remember which one belongs to where. And then just write over the bottom square. So let's do the same question. So if this is our function, f prime of x, we would just sit there and say, alrighty, derivative of the top, which is 3, times the bottom, just 7x minus 9, minus the top, which is 3x plus 4, times the derivative of the bottom, which is just all over the bottom squared, which is 7x minus 9 squared. If you want to do a bit of house cleaning, that would just be 3 times 7x minus 9 minus 7 times 3x plus 4 over 7x minus 9 squared. These are exactly good. So you can see, if I multiply 7x minus 9 over here and here, just to get the same denominator, okay? If I look, just subtracting the common denominator, so I got to multiply this guy by 7x minus 9 over 7x minus 9, just to get a common denominator. But when I do that, I get 3 times 7x minus 9. Correct? 7 times 3x plus 4. And since the common denominator of both of them are 7x minus 9 squared, ladies and gentlemen, they are the same.
Whichever one you like.
This one, if you forgot the quotient rule, you can derive it. Just memorize the quotient rule, just remember, okay, you got a chain rule. Because this is a nice way. So if it's minus 1, automatically chain rule. Just pull this thing out. But if you got room in your head to memorize one, it is nice, it's easy. Right? So the top times bottom minus top times the bottom of the bottom square. Yeah. But either way, so let me just write the quotient rule this way. So Wx equals f of x over g of x. Then W prime of x you won't believe how far you are along. You're probably in some high schools you've done calculus. They stop at all these rules of polynomials. We're just going to keep going. Because you're probably curious, well, not all functions are polynomials. Now, hopefully, in your math, are some of these formulas in your math book sheet that you were given?
All
perfect. So, yeah. You're seeing where they come from. Right? We're just looking at it, nice thing, you don't have to memorize it. If you ever read it, just fall back. You practice a lot of these things. I say you memorize it by osmosis. You do enough of them, you don't even think about it. You just do it. You grok it. You don't even think about it. Right now, you sit there and say, what's the particle? Okay, derivative the first and the second. Keep the particle, keep plus. Plus, the second. Okay, that one I got. But after a while, you can get 20 or 30 or 1,000 of them. You get the homework. Well, that's why they give you all this homework.
So do we get
I'm going to give you a worksheet so that you get to play with this afternoon, which has got some really good ones. They start off easy, understand, but they get more and more complicated. Really get top to the bottom, but the idea is you do as much as you can and you work on it. You know, but the answers are going to be floating around. Good. Let's do some training. Let's do some simple training. Because not all functions are like, some functions are trig. Right? Trig happens in nature all the time. triggers what we call a sinusoidal function. Anything that repeats itself, anything that repeats itself, anything that repeats itself, anything that repeats itself is a trig function. It's sinusoidal. You can see, if you had a pattern of my voice, it would repeat itself. Now, the most common ones, of course, are the sines and the cosines and tangents. And obviously, the word is the sort of sines and cosines. I'm going to give you something to think about. Now, you can tell me how to do the derivative tangent, but I'll do that as a thing at the end. So I'm just going to give you a derivative sine, derivative cosine, and once you do that, we'll do some derivative practices. Okay, nice. So, f of x equals the sine of x. Everyone knows what the sine function looks like? Right? Something like this. Where does it start? Bottom. What does it do? Then what does it do? Then what does it do? And then what does it do? And it uses that like this. So, in calculus, we work in radians. We can work in degrees. If you work in degrees, you have this ugly term added onto it. Now, if you want to do math in some unit, pick a unit that doesn't have ugly stuff keep getting added to itself. So the radians are perfect. So if we're working in radians, the derivative of a sine, do you know it? Have you read that little thing?
Cosine.
So the derivative of a sine function is the cosine function. That's it. Just memorize it. Derivative of sine, cosine, okay? And we all know the cosine. Where does the cosine normally start? Up the top. Where does it normally end? Right on. And so, and then it, like, what does it do? Like, it goes down, and then what does it do? It goes up, and something like that, right? There's actually a phase shift that happens inside there, right? Sine and cosine are off, I think. So, cosine starts at the top, starts at 1. Sine, which makes sense. Remember yesterday I did the unit circle? The circle would be, and I did something like this, and I said, this distance was the cosine, that car, this distance here was the sine, like sky, so sine point, and so this point here is actually the point cosine, and let's call this theta, let's call it x, dx, and sine x. Now, if I make this 1, the radius 1, it's kind of neat. The cosine, when the angle is 1, is just 1 because this is the distance here. And so the cosine, as this point goes right around, the cosine goes to 0. So the cosine of 90 degrees is this right here, which is 0. Or the cosine of 5 to 0. Then the cosine goes over here and it turns into minus negative 1. Remember, all cosine is this distance over here. So as the point goes around, cosine gets smaller back down to 0, and then the cosine goes back to 1. Whereas the sine is the height. So the thing goes around, the height goes to 0. So the sine of 0 is 0. The sine of 90 degrees is 1. And then it goes around, the sine goes down to 0, then goes down to minus 1, and it repeats itself over and over again. So they're actually off by 9 degrees, kind of neat. Sine and cosine. That's a good one. Well, most obvious. F of x is cosine. Then f prime of x is negative.
I know.
Wouldn't you think it'd be nice if it was just sine? Negative sine of x. And it's negative because it's because it's off. And so one's positive, one's negative. One has to be negative. Well, you're off by 90 degrees. The one side's positive, one side's negative. You can kind of see what's happening there. Those are the two things you have to memorize. That's it. Trick is literally done. Don't believe me? Let's do some questions. Right, let's just add these things to my list. questions, like I said, that's because we have stuff. We're not afraid of it. We can do anything. There we go. F of X. No sooner get it done, you're telling me F prime of X is? You got it. 3 equals X. All the same with sister.
Why would be, the derivative of cos X be negative sine X and the derivative of sine X be cos X? Isn't it, let's say, 3 times 2 is the same thing as 2 times 3?
No. In numbers, yes. Not in trig. Because we're off by a phase. Okay? Now, one way of actually proving it, showing it, remember, you can only do the limit. You can do the limit and take the cosine and expand the cosine all out. And you'll sit there and see that it comes out to be minus the sine. Okay. The reason is, right, one's going up, one's going down. Right. And that gives you a bit of a reason of the change. Because depending which quadrant it is, when the sine is going up, I'm okay if my cosine is still the same value. But in my cosine, x value, right, it's going down as my sine is going up. So the best advice that I can say is do a plot. Look at the slope. Remember, all you're doing is you're calculating the slope of the tangent lines. And you can see the tangent lines are negative, 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 zero, positive, 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 and it gets less positive and then go back to zero. So if you kind of plot this, remember, what my slope is, you sit there and say, slope is zero, minus one, minus something, minus something, minus something, minus something. Then it gets less minus, goes back to zero, then it starts going positive, more positive, more positive, positive, then less positive, back to zero. If you just plot those, create your own fictitious numbers for the tangents. So you're trying to figure out what they are. And you plot that, you'll see that if you plot it in terms of that, it represents the what's happening on the curve will look like that, minus sign, which means that this guy is actually flipped going down. So the minus sign will look something like this. Rather than going up, we'd have to go down that sort of curve. Something like that. Best thing to do is, no, great question. And the true proof is through the mathematical expansion. But take one, there's another formula, and just use your calculator, right? And you'll see if you get the actual values, you plot it, it will be derivative of this ends up being the flipped around version of the sine function. Okay? I'm dancing around, but the proof is a lot more complicated than that. You'd have to expand it and you'll see it work. But what I'm telling you, the calculator will guide you. All right, let's do another one. F of x equals sine of x squared. Oh, padding. Okay, what have you got there?
Chain rule.
An LE and an INI. If the LE is the sine, the INI was the x squared. So, the prime of x, the derivative of the LE, the derivative of sine is? So, cosine of x squared. And you multiply with the derivative of the INI, and the derivative of the INI is? 2x. Okay. You know how I put things in brackets? Some books don't do that. I put things in brackets because this x squared belongs inside the cosine. It says, I've eaten it. That's mine. This just says, take this function, which who's eaten the cosine x squared, multiplied by 2x. So this is the same as 2x times cosine of x squared. So it's the same. A lot of people will go for the brackets there and they say, oh, x squared times 2x is 2x cubed. That's not right. Okay. That's a BC. That's a BC. And they're both half. There we go. Oh, yeah. Look at all the stuff we can do.
This is a job for the particle.
And we know the false part rule says, do the derivative of the first, or what's the derivative sign?
Cosine.
Do the first, times the second, plus the first, times the derivative of the second. What's the derivative of cosine? Oh, what about this? What rule are we going to apply?
Chain
rule. So minus the sine of 2x times the derivative of 2x is 2. And then just because we can do some house cleaning, this is cosine of x times cosine of 2x minus 2 times sine of x sine of 2x. Just so that it looks nice and neat. So I just need 2 in front. Minus 2 in front. There we go. Like it? And you do some good stuff. Sometimes, someplace now you're into real heavy university stuff. Some curriculums don't even touch trading high school level. Not at all. Right? All the rules, all these rules still apply. Once you know how to do a bit, I give you the function, the rules apply. Watch this. What do you think the derivative of? I'm gonna let you work on this over your lunch for fun. What do you think the derivative of tangent of x is? Now, I could have given it to you, but sitting and thinking of a way, using your tools, if you can tell me how to figure out what the derivative of tangent is gonna be. Does anybody know what tan is equivalent to in terms of cosine? Now tangent is sine over cosine. So can I not write this as sine x over cosine x? And which rule would I apply? And you're done. And you can do the quotient rule, you simplify it, and you've got the derivative of the tangent. I can even give you secant, right? Which is 1 over what? Anyone know that? Anybody done the trick? 1 over cosine?
Yeah.
And but 1 over cosine, secant, which is the same as 1 over cosine, which is the same as cosine to the, and I can apply my chain rule. I don't have to memorize anything. As long as I know sine and cosine, I can pull out all the other ones if I need to. If I use them, if I use a lot of them, I'll memorize it. But if I don't, I'll pull out what I need. That's grokking math. You pull what you need. You're not afraid of it. I don't go around memorizing. Like I said, memorizing all this stuff. I sit there and say, oh, I'll derive it if I need to. It's only one physics problem you need to know, and because I make, you derive the rest. Well, maybe. Alright. So, we've done all of trig. Let's do logs and exponents. All you do is break the log down and say, oh, that's all I need, yep. And that one, see if you can pull out that one, it's fun. It's probably the answer, probably in your calculus primer or your math primer, or stuff like that. All right. Classical review. The log base 10 of 100 is y. Because 10 squared equals 100, right? When you're doing a logarithm, all you're doing is you're figuring out the exponents. That's all you do. When you say, here's the log of 100, you're saying, okay, what's the exponent on my base 10 that gives me 100? That's all your logarithm is. It's the inverse of the exponent rule if you didn't properly 9 or 10 or 11 or whatever. So when you do a logarithm, you're just figuring out what is the exponent on that base. For example, the log base 2 of 8 is
3,
because 2 cubed is 8. That's all it is, right? Let me make it seem so different. Okay. Now, what would have, what happens if you do logs? Now, you can choose any base that you want. Now, most calculators have two bases. They have base 10, right, and base E. Why, and then you say, why did they choose base E? Because it is easy. Yeah, that doesn't seem it. You're sitting there saying, it's that funny number that keeps going. But let's show you how easy it is. Remember, base E. So first of all, y equals e to the x. Y prime, ready for this? This is the derivative of e to the x.
E to the x.
It's the only function whose derivative is exactly the same. It's changing at the same rate at which it's actually positioning itself. Let's try another one. Remember, all the rules still apply, e to the 2x. So what do you think y prime is going to be? E to the 2x times
2x.
No, nope, there are two x's. Remember, it's a chain rule. Here's the outside, e to the something times the derivative of the something. So e to the 2x, the derivative of e to the something is by itself, the 2x, the derivative of 2x is
2.
So let's do another one, though. Just y equals e to the px squared plus 1. So y prime is e to the, yeah, 3x squared plus 1 times 6x, and we're done. I can do e to the sine. Yeah, let's do e to the sine. And what's the derivative of the sine? E to the x are done. Look at that. I like that. So you can use any base if you want, right? And that's a problem if you use the derivative of 2 to the x, right? We would have this constant multiplier, right, along of 2. So just for those of you who would like to see that, remember, when you're doing logarithms on your calculator, you can choose any base you want. So pick the one that's easy. That's why your calculators give you both. And I'll do the logarithm here. But if y equals 2 to the x, y prime would be 2 to the x times the log of 2. Right? Whereas y equals e to the x, it's just e to the x. Here, you have a 2 to the x, you always have to multiply it by the log, not the log of the base. So y equals 10 to the x, y prime is 10 to the x times the log of I said it, but I forgot. You may not mean. Log is log, base e. Okay. Here, you see this log base 10?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's good. Let me just get rid of this stuff. Yeah. No, that was a good one. So, log base 10 of 100 was 2, right? Log base 2 of 8 was 3. Log base e of 100 is, who knows, I need to calculate it. Right? But it says, e to the something has to be equal to 100. That means my calculator correctly figured this thing out. But since we use log base e so often, log base e, right? We just write natural log of 100. They're just exactly the same thing. Log base e, log, exactly the same thing. And your calculator has that button in there, so you can actually do. You just do 100 or log, like you'll go to the logarithm, you'll have log, just type 100, hit the log button, that will actually tell you what your exponent is. upside down and calculate. So this is the long base E of 10. That's a number, what is a concept, whatever comes out of the calculator. So you have, every time you do one, you have this different number that pops out, and it makes it not as nice as having no number popping out at all, or just a one popping out. But, what? And you sit there and say, well, you've done the derivatives of E's, what about the derivatives of logs then? So we sit there and say, okay, no problem. Again, the easiest one is ln of x. Remember, which is the same as ln base e of x. So you do, remember, how did they figure this thing out? They did the limit definition and they worked it all through and they saw what it came out to. And when it came out to a nice and easy rule. The rule is just 1 over x. Now, you'll see a lot of them put in absolute values in domain restrictions, but I'm not going to worry about that here. Okay. So the derivative of ln of x is 1 over x. Let's try another one. Let's try f of x equals the ln of 3x squared plus x. F prime of x. Then we notice right away you're saying, change rule, little warning flags go up. So the derivative of ln is 1 over 3x squared plus x. And then you multiply by the derivative of the inside, which is 6x plus 1. And so if you want to rewrite that nice and neat to impress a math teacher, so the derivative of the ln of something is just 1 over the something. That's how easy it is. Derivative of ln, and ln is the same as ln base e of x. So derivative of ln is just 1 over. But don't forget, if the something is another function, multiply by the derivative of that function as well. So we're into Wage University now.
Yes,
yeah, because it's easy to x. There's your base function, just x by itself, having a fun time. Soon as I expand this, I give it some meat, I make it different. It's a new function, right? It's a function, it's like f of x, remember, f of x is equal to e to the x, so f of cow is g to cow. Okay, almost. Is that here? I don't know. Oh my god, I forgot the body. I know, it's probably an x. But, right? So, it's a function. But so, if it's not an x, I have to do the derivative of a cow when I do that. So, okay, so. And if you think, even in the x, what's the derivative of x? So, you're automatically doing it, but realize that you're redoing it.
So, can you put that for x? Like, you put it in any way, you put it in
modulus, whatever you want. Oh, yeah. Ln of x, that's the base one, so the derivative of that is just 1 over x. As soon as I put something else in there, it's 1 over that, but the derivative of that, which is that. So if I did 1 over cow, right?
You had to do it for x
too,
but it's just
1. Yeah, exactly. You're doing it for x, but the derivative of x is 1, and you stop changing. I didn't want to say that, but I didn't want to confuse people. But that's like, you pulled it out. That's the idea.
Yes.
So you actually have been doing it without even thinking about it. Because the derivative of x is always 1. Question?
Back there?
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you have x as the exponent, you take the long thing?
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. When you got x as the exponent, yeah, you got to take the ln of the base. Multiply the ln of the base.
And is it just x, or do you have, like, 2x?
Yeah. Angles. Yeah, let's do one. Y equals 2 to the 3x squared, right? So y prime is 2 to the 3x squared times the derivative inside, which is 6x. But then I'm going to multiply by the ln of 2.
And why do you have to multiply by the ln of
2? Because that's the rule. It's only e to the x has its derivative is e to the x. When you have another base to the x, you have this constant term, always there. So if you get to pick, if you get to pick a base, why don't you pick the base that doesn't have a constant term? That's why we like using E's.
You have the 2 to the 3x squared.
Yeah, because the derivative of this is itself times the ln of 2 times the derivative of its inside.
Okay.
Just like this. Well, I kind of did. Just put them on over here. Just like e to the 3x squared. Its derivative is e to the 3x squared. But then I'm going to multiply by the derivative of the inside, which is 6x. So it's itself times the derivative of its inside. But if it's not an e, it's itself, right? Times the derivative of its inside, but times the log of whatever its base was.
Okay.
And if the base is different, it keeps changing. So if it was 10, it'd be log of 10. If it was pi, it would be log of pi. Right? And it's just added piece of nuisance that keeps falling into your equation. So if you get to choose one, pick one where you don't have an added piece of nuisance falling into your equation. Okay, now we're done. Well, now you can even do some fun stuff. You can use algebra and logarithms to solve a whole bunch of other stuff as well. But I'll leave that up to you to play with. How would you do the derivative of x to the x?
This is a lot of info.
You're not expected to memorize this. We've done, Debbie, you've done a whole year in 2 hours. You've got your sheet in your the basic ones you know. Polynomials are all the only ones that you'll be dealing with, right? You know, how many people got polynomials down pat? 3x squared, 3x. Yeah, that's it. And you can look at your notes. I'm just taking you right through the whole gamut. You're seeing everything. Now, if you need to do this, and then you see a lecture, and they say, oh, I'm going to do the derivative of sine, you may sit there and say, oh, I remember. That's all I'm asking. Oh, yeah, I remember. I got it written down, so the derivative of sine is cosine. That's where it came from. That's all we're after. So you'll see it running.
So like basically when we're going through the lecture, you're like talking about stuff.
Oh yeah.
No idea what we're saying.
Yeah, sometimes, they're going to be doing this. I've got 5 minutes, so let me see now. They will talk about a position function, s of t, right? And they'll just write it as s. Right? They're going to bother about the t. They'll write it as s. And they'll say, and they'll give the derivative, d dt, right? And then also in the next line, you'll see the derivative of position is my velocity. So you'll just see the next line, all of a sudden, they'll just write it v of t. Because they said, well, the derivative of velocity, of position, is velocity. You'll also see them do this, dv dt, the derivative of velocity is my... So they'll do that. Now you know what's happening. Right? All they've done is done the derivative. Right? The rate of change of velocity is acceleration. The rate of change of position is velocity. Right? They may do another trig thing and stuff like that. Or they may have a graph, right? And they're talking about maximum minimum. They may say, well, we'll just use the derivative. And why did, when they say they find the maximum minimum, why did they say let's use the derivative? Yes, the derivative will tell you where the zero. Now, how do you think you're going to find it? You set the derivative equal to zero and solve for your variable. And that will tell you where the derivative equals zero. It will give you either here, it will also give you there, right? But wherever the derivative equals zero, that will tell me where it's either a max or a minimum, or where the graph is horizontal. And that's the tool. We get that data. Where is it horizontal? Where is it peaking? Where is it pressing? Now, I've got 5 minutes. I just want to give you a bit of a second year in 5 minutes. Can I do that? There you go. Just symbolic. This is not that bad. To understand symbology is not that bad. Integral calculus is going backwards. It's like, in Canada and United States, we have a game called T-Show for Jeopardy.
Really?
Yeah, some people don't have it in other countries, but
yeah.
Some people do, some people don't. Okay. Jeopardy is a game where I give you the answer, you're going to give me the question. So I give you the derivative, you give me the function. Ah, once you see that, it makes sense. Now, what is cool? They were doing this. Actually, it was Newton again, and he was actually famous by binomial theorem. He needed to, and that helped him figure out this. But one beautiful application of integral calculus is, here's my curve. And if I take my curve and I break it into little chunks, little rectangular chunks, even better. Right? Except my rectangles don't look like rectangles. Right? Let's try that again. Little rectangular chunks. my rectangles look more like trapezoids. Okay. Rectangle. And I want to calculate the area underneath it. Remember, here's my x, right? Here's my function. So if I know how wide these guys are, and I know the value there, I can calculate the area of this rectangle by doing my width times my height. Right? This distance, let's call it, I don't know, let's call it delta x. And let's call this f of x, I don't know. The height, but the area of this little rectangle is delta x times its height, f of x. Well, close enough, right? I can make some rectangles. I just pull like that. It's done, right? So I can get a good approximation. Now, the skinnier my rectangles, the more accurate it's going to be, right? But I have more of them to add up, because I'd have to add them all up. So we want to have a symbol that says, I would like to add these things up. Now, you've already seen this symbol, right? That means add them up. So, but usually it means you got a finite number. But I want it to the limit as the width gets to zero again, just like the calculus. And so if I do this in front of it, the limit as delta x goes to zero, we rewrite that symbol as a skinny s. And then I was going to say, here's my function, that's my height, that's my width. And I use a little d to say it's a very skinny width. Rather than use this to say it's a fat width, I use a little dx that says it's a skinny width. That's the height times width. That's the rectangle. I'm adding them all up. All I have to say is, I would like to start here, start at A, and end at, let's say, B. They're adding up all these little rectangles, the width and the height, width and height, they're adding them all up, summing them all up, that's what it looks like an S. And this would actually give you the area. Something wonderful happens. They will find that it's equivalent to this, where this is the antiderivative of my function. Something wonderful is going to happen. Right? Remember, so they did it the long way, and they found, remember, that's not it, they found by trial and error initially that they got the same answer. If this is my function, because remember, this f of x is the function of the curve. So it could be x squared, x cubed, and stuff like that. So they said, well, if my derivative was x squared, what function? So remember, this is jeopardy. If the answer is x squared, that's the answer. We need one function. What function gives me the answer of x squared? So you say, that's right, 2x cubed. 2x cubed. Find the derivative of 2x cubed. Did you get that? So what do you have to do with this 2x cubed then? Be close. That give me an answer of what? What do we divide by? And does that simplify to x cubed over? Let's try this one. Do the derivative of x cubed over 3?
Yes.
What? And that's why there's more thinking. Now we do have constants that have to worry about. I'm not going to worry about that here. So if you go backwards. They found it went backwards, and they just plugged in these numbers and subtracted, giving the same answer. calculus, integral calculus. There's a tie-in, there's a magical link between the two. Now, I tell you, it's easier to do a derivative than it is to do an antiderivative. We've got all the rules. It's easier to go forward than it is to go backwards. Especially if I give you one that had all those, remember the ones that we did that had all those, imagine me giving you, we did the one over here that went all the way across the board? I said, here's the answer, give me the function that gives me that as a derivative. We'd be here for years trying to figure that thing out. Right? So people, we have functions that we cannot figure out yet. Right? We use computers to approximate, different ways of getting close and close to approximating these things. We have books, I have books like this thick that have tables of integrals. Right? This is how some guy spent like 12 years of his life figuring out how to do this one integral. And they got one line in book, right? But then we just use it. We actually buy software that helps us do this stuff. But this is what you see here. So whenever you see this, always remember, they're adding up a whole bunch of things underneath it. They're summing up something. That's what the symbol means. They're summing up something.
So like the sum is basically the, you just find the antiderivative and you plug in the AP value.
Yes, yes, you subtract, perfect, and you'll get, that's what it's all about. If you, if it's a nice easy thing to figure out an antiderivative, most times it's ugly. It's ugly, right? But you haven't put yet, your books are in there. Now, it's wonderful what you can do with this. Because this says, I can handle things that change, right? I'm summing up the force of a rocket ship. I'm summing up a work. Anything can multiply two things by each other, right? So if I'm summing up things, like if I'm a rocket ship, and I'm launching myself on the space shuttle, right? It's on the pad, getting ready in about, friends, about 2 weeks to go up there again, right? The engines ignite, right? And you're sitting there, so what's easy? F equals ma. And then force equals mass times acceleration. What is happening to the mass in the rocket ship? It's decreasing because it's burning its fuel. So I would have to really calculate each, the force times the mass at the different mass rates and add them all up. And that would give me the true amount of force being produced. Because the mass is always changing, decreasing in the real world, right? A rocket doesn't burn fuel and not use up the fuel. So you'd have to say, okay, here's my mass, here's my force at this point. Okay, now I've got to do another second later. Then here's my force from this second to this second. Here's my force from this second to this second. Then I have to add them all up together. It does it. Using this, you can rewrite this and do it in one line and calculate the total stuff. And you got it done.
So we're totaling a force. So does it end with ball problem?
No, but that ball problem that you see him floating around on the thing.
I
spend my time, there's other great problems to work on. Probably stuff dealing with quantum mechanics and special relativity, general relativity.
It was three ball.
It is an interesting problem to play with. But I think you can spend some time thinking about this stuff. But yeah, what a great, it's a tool. It is a great tool for adding up stuff. Work, anything that you need. How much water, how much pressure is on a submarine underwater? Because the submarine is got a shape, and it's got some part of the submarine's higher and deeper than other parts of the submarine. You can calculate the total amount of force on the surface there. Add them all up, sum up all the forces. That's what this thing does. If things change, forces change from different depths. This is a technique for doing it. And this is the whole, this is a lot more complicated. The complicated part is the antiderivative. How do you do the antiderivative? Because it's easy, the nice easy ones that you've seen, but sometimes you've got to use every trick you can think of to try to figure out what that antiderivative is.
We aren't doing this another day.
No, we're done. We're actually done. I just want to show you, when you see this, what it represents. This is what this represents. Right? It represents the adding up. Now, right now, we've done all high school. We're in second year. You've already got one campus credit at the university. Right? You're now.
You write it down for us.
Yeah, I'll write it right down. And you're now looking at your second.
I'm
Derivative of log 10 to the x. But just the same thing. What's the derivative of log x? It's going to be 1 over x times 1 over the log of 10. So it's 1 over, but then now you have 1 over log of 10.
So the base, that works for all bases.
All bases. Because the, right, the log of e is 1. Well then, remember, you're not expected to memorize all of this stuff. All you're expected to do is recognize, oh, it's a rate of change. We have rules that can work this thing out. Sometimes the rules get complicated, but if I memorize them, or I go where to look to find them, I can pull it out. The other end just does count its area, but the link between it is this is equivalent to doing going backwards. All it is. It ends up equivalent to going backwards. It's cool, it is cool, right? Remember, you've done it in, we started about 20 to 10. So you think about it, you had about 20 minutes. You've done it 1 hour. Almost 1 hour, 45 minutes max. You've done all for university level credit in calculus, and you're probably about a month into credit number two, integral calculus, because you're starting to appreciate there's something that feels good summing up rectangles and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, next year I'm going to get some problems for you to work on after lunch. Okay, you can have lunch. Should be out there. Meet. Hope you learned something, guys.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of stuff here.